You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
A bay-wide survey, probably a little over a million, but a coast-wide survey, probably 3 million, something along those lines.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Guidepost. Will Poston here from ASGA. And in today's episode, we'll be talking about some menhaden research with Dr. Jenny Nislaj from the University of Maryland's Chesapeake Biological Laboratory. And before we get into Jenny's work, you know, I just wanted to quickly, kind of give some background on menhaden, because as many of you know, menhaden management has become quite the hot button topic these days. On one side, you've got the public, much of this public campaign seeking to further restrict or push out the menhaden reduction fleet out of the Chesapeake Bay, out of concerns of localized depletion and, you know, the possibility that this fleet's catches are having a negative ecological impact. And then on the other side, you have the reduction fishery, i.e., Omega Protein down in Reedville, Virginia, kind of leaning in on the fact that coastwide menhaden are not overfished or subject to overfishing. And, you know, ASGA has engaged on menhaden for a long time, since our inception, and we're incredibly pleased by the commission's adoption and implementation of ecological reference points, which, take a more holistic view of menhaden management and consider some of the predator-prey dynamics. But much like anything in fisheries management and science, all of this is a process that needs to be continuously improved upon, ecological reference points included, and kind of understanding the role of menhaden in the bay proper. So, last week at the ASMFC's Menhaden Management Board, we were really encouraged by a new menhaden Chesapeake Bay science plan by Dr. Rob Latour of VIMS, and Jenny's acoustic survey of overwintering menhaden to, potentially improve how we count menhaden at certain times of the year. So with that, let's go in. Jenny, welcome to the Guidepost. How are you doing on this nice spring day?
Loving the nice spring weather. Thank you.
Yeah, it has been nice. Today, at least, it's not raining, but nothing wrong with a nice 80 degree spring day here in the DC area. So before we dive into, this awesome work, Jenny, which, I can't emphasize enough to our listeners, it's so interesting, and I think has great implications for the future. But can you kind of give us a little quick background of, how you got into fisheries, what you've done in your past, just kind of give us a little rundown.
Sure. So I took a little bit of a circuitous path to fisheries. I actually started out in wildlife ecology and PopDy, population dynamics, and was a faculty member doing wildlife work. And then I eventually, for other reasons, family reasons, ended up transitioning to the DC area. And in doing so, I switched from wildlife to fish population dynamics and became a stock assessment scientist at the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. I worked there for, I think, 8 years or so as their senior stock assessment scientist. I worked on Atlantic menhaden, which is how I got into menhaden, but also striped bass, American lobster, variety of other species that they manage, and worked on those assessments. And then I thought after 8 years there, it was time to maybe dive a little bit more deeper into research. And so I ended up moving to Chesapeake Biological Lab. And I'm now a research associate professor here. And my research focuses on stock assessment methods and trying to improve the science and the way in which we assess stocks and try to determine what sustainable harvest rates should be. So not just the models, definitely the models that go that are used to determine stock status and catch quotas, but also the science that goes into those models.
Awesome. I got to imagine, your past work in wildlife, it's a lot easier to count animals than fish, right?
Absolutely. When I talk to general audiences, I usually say, well, I'm trying to figure out how many fish are in the sea, which is one of the hardest things in the world to do.
Well, this is a perfect prelude because, you might have found a better way to count fish through this work. So Jenny, can you kind of, give our listeners a little kind of overview of the project? Maybe we can start with, what were kind of the motivating factors to do this work? And then how was it designed?
Sure. So the project initially began because there was interest in New Jersey in understanding how many menhaden, what the biomass of menhaden was off the coast of New Jersey in the kind of mid-Atlantic region in the winter. And the reason for that was that in about 2014 or so, the midwater trawl fleet started to harvest menhaden for bait in the winter for a variety of reasons, but they very quickly caught the quota annually. And they reported that there was a lot more menhaden out there. They were seeing tons of menhaden, but managers can't go off of those kind of anecdotes. In order to even remotely consider any change in the quota, they really needed some sort of information about how much biomass there actually is relative to the quota. And so we started to think about how we might figure out how many menhaden are in the sea over winter off of New Jersey. And what we started by doing was designing an acoustic survey back in 2015, 2016. And that survey design was published in 2020 and reviewed by the ASMFC. And then we were lucky enough to get funding to go on the water from NOAA Fisheries through the Salt and Stahl Kennedy program. It was delayed a year, but we ended up on the water in 2022. And so the results are just rolling out now.
Awesome. And just to, kind of give our listeners a little more insight, because they've heard acoustic surveys on this podcast before in relation to our false albacore research, where we're implanting acoustic tags and then utilizing the network of acoustic receivers. But you're talking about more or less the most powerful and technologically advanced like fish finders, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So the vessel that we used was a commercial midwater trawler, and they're equipped with a variety of acoustic equipment. But the pieces that we were using primarily were their very, very powerful down sounder, as well as their omnidirectional sonar, which is kind of the down sounder, of course, is pointing down under the boat. Also, we'll call it an echo sounder, but then the omnidirectional sonar is reaching out in front of the boat and to the side of the boat, so we can see schools that are coming at us as we approach them.
Yep, awesome. And I know, in past conversations with you, and definitely at the Menhaden Management Board meeting last week, one of the big takeaways for me and kind of highlights and just something that you like to see in fisheries management and science, right, is when you have this cooperative research that is kind of ground truthing what people are seeing on the water. So I think right off the bat that was a huge takeaway for me, and just again a success. But you had some other successes, and you guys had some pretty I guess we'll call it pretty great and interesting findings out of this work. If you kind of want to, dive in, you know, what you all found, you know, from Hudson Canyon down towards Delaware Bay in two winters ago offshore Jersey, and, you know, how many menhaden you found and kind of how you were able to, you know, check that against, you know, utilize that sonar technology to count fish.
Yeah. So I might take those questions in reverse order. So
yeah, sorry, I gave you a lot.
No, that's fine. Yeah, so we were able to use the sonar to estimate individual schools that we of menhaden that we encountered as we basically ran the vessel along straight line transects up and down the study area, like you said, from the southern end of Hudson Canyon down to the Delaware border. And in doing so, if we came across a school within the search range of the omnidirectional sonar, which was about 3 kilometers across, we would go over to it and then go over it with the down sounder and try to estimate the biomass of those schools using the down sounder data. But then for a subset of those, we also trawled, used the trawl, set the net on the school and captured the school and placed them in individual tanks on the vessel, so that we could pump them out dockside, weigh them, and figure out how different or similar the weight actual of the school as weighed out at the dock was relative to our data analysis of the down sounder. So we could kind of, like you said, validate or at least determine how close those two estimates were. So then once we had the estimate of biomass for all the schools that we encountered on those straight line runs that we did up and down the study area, we expanded those out to the entire study area and came up with an estimate of between 17 and about 24 million pounds of, and that's probably an underestimate because there's a bunch of caveats that go along with the analysis, but we tried to be as conservative as we could so we weren't overinflating the estimates.
Yeah, because it's like the age-old question, right? And this kind of came up at the Menhaden Management Board meeting that, you know, just because you catch fish somewhere doesn't mean that they're going to be everywhere else on that, you know, sample area. But it, you know, the way I kind of digested it, you know, that one of the takeaways from this study was, you know, you kind of can't, like some species like these schooling, like a schooling menhaden species, like you kind of have to sample where they are to get the, you know, the real picture of the coastwide biomass, right? So that, am I correct in saying that was kind of one of the takeaways and one of the benefits of you know, working, you know, cooperatively with a fisherman who was, you know, wanted to catch the menhaden, obviously. Is that a good takeaway from that?
Yeah, absolutely. If we had just gone out there and just used the down sounder or just the sonar equipment in general, we wouldn't really have that understanding that our estimates from the down sounder were actually reasonably accurate if we hadn't trawled on those schools and weighed them out. So that was really an advance that I don't think, I'm not sure anybody else has done that, at least in recent years, and it certainly hasn't ever done it for menhaden that I know of. And so that really gives us some confidence that acoustics can be used to estimate menhaden schools, even if they are really large in certain circumstances. Folks, before we set out on the water, were a little dubious because they are, if you've ever seen a menhaden school or video of a menhaden school, they are huge and dense. And so trying to get a down sounder data and use that to estimate biomass of schools is pretty tricky. So I think we were able to say, yeah, we're at least close. We're pretty close.
You know, and one of the other interesting pieces from your presentation at ASMFC last week was, you know, kind of how you, you know, you needed a certain menhaden behavior to be, for this to be really effective, right? So when this warm water eddy rolled in further on across the study time period, the menhaden behavior changed and they dispersed, right? So you kind of couldn't, or maybe not as effectively leveraged that technology, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that was a surprise to us. I mean, the fishermen had said that occasionally they behave strangely, maybe once or twice a season. They'll instead of forming those big dense schools near the middle or the bottom of the water column, they disperse up into the right near the surface, more like what they do in the summertime. When we first got out there, the water was cold and they were balled up on the bottom and we could see them. They were beautiful. And then after that, there was a warm core eddy rolled some hot saline water up onto the shelf off of Jersey, and they just broke up into small schools near the surface. So we couldn't get over them and get the down sounder data on them. So we still noted them, so they are used in the analysis for scaling it up, but we don't have a good estimate for many. I think we only got two or three of them. In the latter half of the survey.
Cool. So, you know, this is clearly, you know, turning out to be a viable design for menhaden, at least, you know, in these cooler months with, you know, wintering aggregations. Were there any kind of insights into some of the other schooling forage fish out there? You know, I think of, you know, in some of my work on mackerel and herring, you know, there used to be biomasses out in that area that time of year. But, you know, both of those stocks are severely depleted right now. They're probably not as prevalent off the Jersey coast as they would have been 20 years ago. But, you know, is this technology or design viable for other species, maybe in that time frame or sample area, study area?
Yeah, sure. I know herring in particular form very similar types of schools, but they look different on the down sounder screen. They aren't as dense, and so they have a different color on the screen, so the fishermen can usually tell them apart really easily. And we found that the menhaden schools were almost entirely made of menhaden, so they weren't. We were worried, oh, maybe they were mixing with herring and or mackerel. That would make it really difficult. But the amount of other fish in these schools was trivial. There were maybe a handful out of, you know, hundreds of thousands of, you know, pounds. So that was good. So I think that promises makes it more promising that in the future we could more easily do a menhaden survey, a herring survey, or do a kind of schooling pelagic survey where we would get it all two or three of them. And be able to tell without harvesting them all those schools, what the species are that we encountered.
Yeah, no, it would definitely be a little bit trickier with herring. I think, like, I'm engaged in a herring management action where the whole, a lot of the tilt, right, is because of midwater trawls efficiency, coupled with, you know, some of that fleet up in the Northeast operates a lot closer to shore where there are more user conflicts and there are questions with, how deep they're actually going, whether they're grabbing bottom and affecting, you know, like herring when they spawn are so hyper aggregated where you might not be able to, you know, have that, you know, that 1v1 comparison that, you know, confirmed the acoustic design for the menhaden study. But, you know, at the same time, the acoustic work could be, you know, incredibly useful for kind of better understanding that herring, those spawning sites, just because of how aggregated herring do form. But that's neither here nor there. That's a whole nother topic where we could go way down the rabbit hole. I wanted to, you know, kind of turn, we just kind of spoke about, you know, potential future implications of this work. And, you know, I think the opportunity is ripe for some of those other schooling fish. But tell me a little bit about, you know, how, what your understanding is about how this work might be folded into management. And, you know, maybe we need to sidetrack a little bit and kind of talk about the, you know, during this whole work, you were also doing biological sampling. So kind of how that folds in into management considerations and, you know, these upcoming 2025 stock assessments.
Yeah, so the I don't know that the estimate of biomass itself would be used per se directly in the stock assessment. That's not really, that wasn't our goal, and that's not really appropriate per se. But the estimate of biomass does give us some credence to the selectivity assumptions that we're making in the stock assessment. So we assume that the fishery, which most of the fishery is, of course, the reduction fishery, the vast 75%-ish is encountering only age 1 and 2s. Whereas we think, based on our models and the assumptions that we're making in our models, that they're not interacting much with 3, 4, 5s, and 6s, which are farther north and outside the range of the current reduction fishery. And so, at least in the more recent decades, since it's really the whole reduction fishery fleet has shrunk down to one port and one operator. So because of that, we make a very strong assumption in the stock assessment model that that's going on, that that's the truth. But we weren't running any menhaden surveys to know whether that was the truth. And all we got were a handful of bait samples from Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and, you know, New Jersey, a few little pieces of data here and there that gave us kind of an inkling that we think there's a bunch of older, larger menhaden out there, but we weren't 100% sure. And now at least we can say, yeah, they're definitely up there. They're definitely larger, older fish, because we did collect samples when we trawled on individual schools. And so most of the animals that we encounter were ages 3 and 4. There were a few 5 and 6s as well. So these are, and they were mostly mature, but not actively spawning. So they weren't, we weren't fishing on spawn or surveying on spawning aggregations, which is also good. But the whole take home then is that, yeah, there is a biomass, a significant biomass of mature older fish out there. And so I think we can, the first takeaway for the stock assessment is, yeah, we can say with confidence that we think we're making the right assumption in general, that the reduction fishery data is not representative of the entire stock. They're only focusing on ages 1 and 2 primarily. So that's kind of the biggest take home. The other additional pieces that might end up being informative are the age data that we collected. As part of that, we collected a large number, over 300 samples of both scales and otoliths, the ear bones, that are, we can basically count the rings like tree rings to get their ages. And we had a number of different labs, the Beaufort NOAA lab, which normally does most of the menhaden aging, the VIMS, Virginia Institute of Marine Science, Fisheries Lab, and New Jersey DEP all aged them. And they had trouble, I'll admit. They're bigger, older fish from earlier in the season than they usually encounter, because most of what they see in any given year is coming from the reduction fishery, ages 1 and 2. So they actually went through and aged all the samples, and now they realized, oof, we need to take a much closer look because this is much more difficult than we thought. And so they're re-aging them again, and they're going to get together later in the year to put their heads together and come up with some best practices for moving forward. So as you know, the bait proportion of the fishery that's bait now has gone up and up to 25% now. So that's a significant chunk of the landings that, if we're not aging them correctly, could impact the assessment. But I think it's a matter of getting the methods down and coming up with some best practices with this very informative data that we were able to collect on these older animals that we almost never see in the biological sampling that's done at ports.
So we have, like, you know, we meaning, you know, the stock assessment science team, you know, has a year, right, where they can probably determine whether this information can fold in right before the 2025 assessment. So,
well, I should quantify that whatever our agers determine are the best practices probably wouldn't be put into practice until the next assessment, because they've just finished, I believe, or will be finishing very shortly, all the aging for this assessment.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so but I guess, it could make.
Yeah, I guess back to my opening statement, right? Science is a process and it takes a while, but you know, it's all for the better. So, you know, again, great to see, because again, you know, ASGA was super interested in this in this approach, just, you know, again, it's innovative. It's kind of, it's ground truthing some things that people are seeing. And it's potentially going to improve the management of, you know, the aptly named most important fish in the sea. So this is all so great. Within the bay specifically, and Jenny, I know this is something I had a brief sidebar with you on recently, you know, how, again, just for our listeners, you know, this acoustic survey design was so effective because in the winter months, menhaden form these dense aggregations and are, you know, near the bottom of the ocean. How could this be potentially used in the bay, or, you know, some of these lessons learned from this survey? Could anything from your work be kind of leveraged in the Chesapeake Bay to, you know, get some better estimates or understanding of the bay's population? Is that, you know, a possibility?
Yeah, I think a couple lessons learned. We wouldn't use the same approach, as you mentioned. They don't have the same behavior in the summer as, or in the spring and fall, as they do in the winter when the water's really cold. And obviously we were in much deeper water than in the bay. So we had that advantage too. We could actually get over them really easily. In the summer months, spring and fall too, they're just very flighty and will try to run from the boat. So it's really hard to get over them. So to get the downsounder data. So I think the proposals that have been done so far, developed so far for study designs, involve side scan sonar and a combination of that along with some sort of spotter pilot aerial survey, so we can get it. You know, what do you see when they're at the top of the water column, and what do you see when they're not at the top of the water column? The ones that are below the surface that the spotters can't see. That would be the ideal way to handle that in the bay. But the fact that we were able to successfully use omnidirectional sonar to identify these schools, given their density, it's really obvious. When you come up against a big menhaden school, oof, you can just tell. The screen just pops. So
yeah, just straight red.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I was dubious. I wasn't sure that the fishermen said, oh, yeah, we can tell instantly. And I think we were able to show that, yeah, you really can tell when it's a big, big menhaden school coming on the echogram. So, yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, that side scan stuff is certainly intriguing. I, on one of those Chesapeake workshops, I think the week or the month before you presented, Dave Secor presented, and, you know, I think there's some early stage work on using side scan to kind of estimate blue catfish abundance in some of these Chesapeake Bay tributaries. And again, it's kind of, you know, a similar ASGA kind of has a similar thought to that as we do with your work, right? It's just, it's leveraging these advancements in technology that so many anglers now readily have, and kind of folding it into fishery science is super exciting. So we will be certainly, you know, watching how things may unfold in the bay. You know, maybe we can kind of close out here on you know, next steps, or you know what, like, I think you would be thrilled, and I know many menhaden management board members would be thrilled, and scientists would be thrilled if, you know, there could be a coast-wide overwintering, you know, survey, acoustic survey for menhaden. I think that would, you know, give us an incredible amount of information that we don't have. So, you know, with that, I guess, you know, what are some next steps? What are, you know, pie in the sky hopes and dreams for this work? What do we have?
Yeah, I think some of the follow-ups from this that were very promising. I already mentioned the aging work. I think that could really impact future stock assessments. If we can improve our aging of these older fish, that would be really great. They are, you know, a smaller portion of the population, but getting the information on year classes as they you know, progress from age 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, et cetera, is how we estimate stock status and stock size and fishing mortality, all of these things in a stock assessment. So it's really important.
And quickly, I'm just going to jump in. Like I have on previous conversations, this is how my brain works. Do we have any way right now with menhaden to kind of parse out where some of these overwintering schools that you guys encountered come from? Or, you know, is there any way to, you know, understand, you know, which nursery habitats they potentially came from?
Yeah, there are some otolith microchemistry techniques, maybe. That's not my area of specialty. I know it's been used to identify nursery areas. Whether it could be used to identify where the adults are primarily spending their time, if it's off a Hatteras or staying up north, I don't know if that could be done, but that would be very interesting. I'd have to talk to someone who knows that stuff.
You know, like I guess I'm thinking, like, you know, maybe these Jersey fish, you know, are, you know, Maine spawned menhaden or Massachusetts, or, you know, maybe they are just Chesapeake Bay fish that went, found a good pocket of water up north. You know, we don't know what we don't know, but yeah, sorry for cutting you off there. Just one of these questions that pops into my head.
Yeah, no, I think most of the previous work that had been done had indicated that most of the stock they thought was still being the nursery area, primary nursery area, was still the Chesapeake Bay, but we know that there's nursery areas in Rhode Island and Delaware, et cetera. So the importance of those to the coastwide stock, that would be the real, really important part to understand. That would be really cool. But yeah, so for our future impacts for our study and where we're going next, I think the other really interesting thing that we found was that our weight at age was quite different than what is assumed in the stock assessment. And we compared that with the NEMAP survey that's done on along the coast by VIMS, Virginia Institute of Marine Science. And I think they had similar weights to us. New Jersey DEP collected some more weights this winter during their offshore, their ocean trawl survey, and they were similar to ours. And so the question then is, are the weights at age lower today than they were in the past? Or is the case that maybe the assumptions we're making in stock assessment are a result of something else that we're doing with the data prep, because we do model size at age. And so there could be a step or two in there. We do some manipulations to the data to account for some of the sampling inadequacies and the fact that, you know, the reduction fishery doesn't go up north much anymore. So we try to account for that, but maybe our accounting for it may have thrown us off kilter a little there. So so we're hoping to, we just got funded, Dr. Amy Schuler, who's the lead stock assessment scientist for menhaden, she and I got funded to take a closer look at all the weighted age and length at age data for the whole coast to try and determine what the best way to estimate time varying growth is for this fish, because they do vary by we think probably density, how many are out there, and probably, you know, food availability, who knows, temperature.
Yeah, that's great to hear. You know, I'm no stock assessment scientist, but I've been on enough, you know, peer review calls where, you know, you kind of learn by changing just a couple assumptions or, you know, pulling different levers, you know, there can be pretty drastic, you know, outputs for the assessment. And, you know, then from there you have, potential management change. So that'll be super interesting to follow as that progresses. So I'm glad to hear that work is continuing. As closing, again, I mentioned how great it would be to have like a coastwide menhaden winter survey. And I'm putting you on the spot here, but, you know, in your estimation, like what would that cost? You know, I was talking to some people at the Menhaden Management Board, and they were saying, you know, this survey technique is pretty expensive, but you know, what in your mind, you know, because I think we're obviously seeing the fruits of that labor in the utility. Is that something that's realistic, or is that just, you know, crazy to think about?
Yeah, I think it's obviously all about priorities from funding agencies. We were very focused in one small area, obviously, and so we were able to do it on a smaller budget than a coastwide survey obviously would. And we were also able to avoid having to use spotter pilots because we could actually use a midwater trawler to encounter those schools and see them on below the boat with the acoustics. So it was a unique situation. If we were to do more of what's been proposed in the past for by VIMS and Dr. Rob Latour there for a coastwide survey, and I think most of the Menhaden scientists were on board with this, very much on board with this design, would be to do a coastwide survey during the fall migration. So you would make sure that the schools aren't double counted, because they'd be heading, most of the schools that are migrating would be heading south, and you'd be going the opposite direction, and then you'd get those ones that are going to overwinter as you hit the mid-Atlantic and southern New England region. But that would involve, because they are moving and it's warmer, that would involve both a vessel with acoustics and spotter pilots to try and to get estimates of schools that are not in your line of the vessel that it's running. And so that gets expensive, more expensive than what our project was, just shy of $300,000. And that involved a lot of in-kind labor of love work from all the teams involved. So it was a bit of a shoestring budget. But that being said, the estimates that have been thrown around roughly in the past have been, a bay-wide survey, probably a little over $1 million, but a coast-wide survey, probably $3 million, something along those lines. That might be high, that might be a little low. It depends on who's involved and what sort of either in-kind or, some sort of collaborative, cooperative work that could be done to offset some of the costs. But it is pretty expensive to run those surveys. But that being said, we've had numerous very large projects funded for other species in the South Atlantic. We had greater amberjack and red snapper recently received very large pots of money. So it's all a matter of priorities by the funding and government agencies. So yeah.
For sure. Well, definitely some food for thought there for our listeners. And Jenny, any kind of closing thoughts? Or, we will link your report and the ASMFC slides in the podcast info. And it's actually already going up in our ASMFC meeting recap blog. But, anything else you'd like to add?
No, just I really appreciate everyone's interest in advancing Menhaden science. It is one of the coolest fish out there, and it's super important. And I hope that someday we'll be able to expand the survey work and get some real, real good answers about how many menhaden are out there.
You and I both. Well, thanks again, Jenny. And I hope you have a great rest of your Wednesday here. It was good talking to you. We will be paying close attention to how this work continues. So thanks again for stopping by the Guidepost.
Thank you for having me.